Gaucho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Gaucho Land Podcast. So, man, do we have a lot to talk about. We had quite a few interesting Champions League and Europa League matches. So we'll talk a little bit about that at the top. We'll talk about Dybala's imminent extension and what that means for Juve at the top. Since it is Friday and we have some exciting Serie A games coming this weekend, we have 1,000 names on deck with his picks. Since we're going to talk a little bit about Juve at the top, we have an Inter guest. The teams are facing each other. Debut of the season for Fulvio Santucci, who did a fantastic job last season covering Inter for us. We took a deep dive, really nice chat there. So Inter fans, I think you'll enjoy it. Next week, we'll cover Milan a little bit more. But before we get to all that, you guys know, if you've been listening to the pod for a while, you know that Jose Mourinho is one of Alex and I's favorite topics to discuss. I gotta say, I'm not a big Mourinho guy, but I did get sucked into the whole hype with Roma, and I did enjoy the Mourinho experience. But yesterday, Alex, we had quite an interesting moment. So Milan played Bodo Klimt, the team in the Europa League. They gave up 6 goals. This is the first time in Jose's career that he's given up 6 goals in a match. Granted, he had a lineup with a lot of reserves. So I want to ask you this, Alex. You've experienced Mourinho at Chelsea. You've experienced him at Man United. You have a lot of history with him. So I'm going to read you, he had quite a few interesting quotes after the game, but I'm going to read you this one. And I want to ask you if you think this is the beginning of the end for Mourinho at Roma, or if this is just like a colorful quote. So after giving up 6 goals to Bodo Klimt, he said, "At least now I will no longer be asked why I field the same players. The responsibility is mine. I decided to make a lot of changes and we ended up losing to a team that has more quality than us." Now, if you go on transfer marketing, look at the values of the squads for whatever that's worth. Roma's, even with that lineup yesterday, had a much higher transfer value on the market. So, Alex, what do you make of this quote? Do you think this is the beginning of the end or just a colorful quote that we'll laugh at in a few months?
Well, David, I love a little Jose Mourinho segment to start an episode. I really do. And I've always said, before I really answer this question, I've always said that I can think maybe he's done, or I can at least think that maybe at this stage he's overrated, whatever. But I'm always happy when he's in our game because it gives us something extra to talk about. And now specifically to what he said and them getting shellacked, 6-1 to a team that, David, I'll be honest, I haven't heard of. I really haven't heard of the team they got beat by. I was a little surprised to see that they were second in the group with Roma even going into that game, I believe, in this Europa Conference League. Then again, I mean, it's such a bottom tournament compared to the Champions League. I'm not surprised I haven't heard of a team that's second in the group in that type of a competition. But yeah, I mean, Mourinho's waffling, as the kids would say, or as just people in the UK would say, he's waffling. That's absolutely absurd that he's saying, well, the players are just better there than my second team. First of all, what an insult to his second team. I mean, what a way to lose your players. I'm not sure that's actually going to happen. So in terms of you saying, is this the beginning of the end? I don't know. I know that based on some groups and some moments for Mourinho, if he didn't have a strong connection with the dressing room, if he had said that his second team, which obviously is still a good handful of players with notoriety at least, maybe they're not top players in the game these days, but you know, those are players that most of us listeners know, his second team. I know that many dressing rooms would say, excuse me, you don't think we're as good as that team that most people haven't heard of? F off. So it is one way to lose a dressing room. I just don't know if it'll happen because maybe Mourinho feels like that was the certain section of his team he could take a little pop at. I'm not sure, but usually that's a pretty risky way to go early on in a season, especially. And especially when the players aren't dumb, David, they kind of know your history, Jose. They kind of know that you're more likely to lose it than any of the players. So on one hand, the more I speak about this, the more I am kind of thinking that he could lose a decent part of the dressing room, and maybe only the starters will really feel like they're playing for him now. But on the other hand, I'm just thinking that, is Mourinho really going to lose everything he's done so far at Roma over a Europa League conference game? Is he really going to lose everything based on one game against a team I've never heard of in a Europa League conference game? David, I'm pretty sure this competition didn't even exist last season. So he's going to throw it all away because of this? I mean, that would be pretty shocking. And that would be the true writing on the wall that this guy just can't do it anymore. But I feel like I need to reel it in. I feel like I need to reel it in because on the Serie A front, they're okay. They're fine. You know, they still have plenty to fight for. And this league, we've said it, it's wide open comparatively to years past. So it would just be really silly. Even if I'm of the belief that Mourinho's kind of past it, it would still be really silly of Mourinho to just already have these type of fireworks this early on when you have plenty of stuff to play for and you can't really lose your job or lose the dressing room at the very least over a Europa League conference game. So I think the quote specifically is a joke, David. I'm not surprised who it came from. I think Mourinho is usually pretty bad at taking blame. Usually. He's done it plenty in his career because he's coached forever and ever and ever. But he can be pretty bad in terms of his willingness to take blame, etc. And I just don't know if when he said that, if he actually thought people were buying his quote. If it was just like, I'm going to lie, everyone knows I'm lying, but I'm just going to do the Jose thing. Like, sometimes I almost feel Jose buys into the Jose stuff, if you know what I mean, where he kind of appears like he doesn't care what we think of him or his kind of iconic personality is to our eyes. He pretends like he doesn't care, almost like Belichick doesn't care. But Belichick truly doesn't care, Bill Belichick, the Patriots coach. I actually think Jose does. So sometimes I wonder if Jose says these things because he almost feels like he has to uphold some type of reputation that he has. But yeah, I mean, if he really believed that we would believe what he was saying, then he has totally lost the plot. So David, I don't know what direction this is going to go. I can't fully confidently answer this saying, yep, this is the beginning of the end. But I will just say, I won't be surprised. I won't be surprised, because if that Roma dressing room has any type of like camaraderie and togetherness between the B team and the A team, and maybe it does start to already sour the milk on Jose. But I do come back to what I said. I'm having a hard time believing that it's going to be the beginning of the end for Mourinho over a Europa League conference game. But then again, if there's any manager who's going to lose it over that type of a game, yeah, it will be Jose. So, David, I mean, I was just saying, in Serie A, I mean, it's been fine, you know? They've had some good moments, and the league's so wide open that they're still in it, whatever in it means, they're still in it. So, overall, how do you rate? What do you think of Jose's tenure at Roma so far?
So well said, Alex. And just to point out for those that did see the lineup, but this is something Marcotti tweeted yesterday, still Roma started Rui Patricio, Diarra, Carlos Perez, El Shaarawy, Borja Mayoral, VR, and lastly, Kumbula, which is a player I briefly want to talk about, because you talked about how Mourinho threw his reserves under the bus. Same with Reynolds. So if you're an American who's following Reynolds in Serie A, that has not worked out great for him there with Mourinho. Yeah, so he totally threw them under the bus. You know, what's interesting is Kumbula, who when he arrived at Roma, had that great season at Verona. He kind of looked like a young version of Barzagli, this elegant defender. He's been an absolute bust at Roma. And if you think about it, there were three players that were 21 years old sold for big fees. We had Tonali, Kulusevski, and Kumbula. And all three last season struggled. Tonali's been fantastic this season. Kulusevski's been a little bit up and down. He did score over the weekend, but Kumbula's been a real disaster for Roma. And he was one player that I was pretty excited that Mourinho was going to take over. But after that match, and that quote from Mourinho, wow. So I will say this. I think we're going to have a quickly we'll have an answer on, was this the beginning of the end or was this one-off? Because coming up, Roma is going to host Napoli on Sunday. Huge test. Then they travel to Cagliari, who, you know, are relegation race Mazzari, and then they play Milan. So I think we're going to have a pretty good idea of what Roma is all about. They also have three games in 7 days, so he's going to have to do some turnover. So I'm going to be very curious on what we see there. As far as the tenure of Mourinho at Roma, you are right. In Serie A, they are pretty much where we expected them to be. They are in fourth place now. But when I look at the results so far, I would say their best win of the season was probably against Fiorentina, who were playing, which was right at the beginning of the season. They beat them 3-1. They also beat Sassuolo. They beat Empoli. They beat Salernitana. So they won the matches they were supposed to. But I would say the matches where you were hoping to maybe get the little Jose bounce hasn't really come through. So they lose to Lazio, and they definitely deserve to lose that game. It was a pretty controversial game against Juve, but they lose that one 1-0. Maybe we look at that game very differently if Berrettou takes a good penalty, and he's usually one of the best ones in Italy. So I think his tenure in Serie A has been fair. I wouldn't say it's been great, but right about where we expected it to be. So I think the next few matches are going to be really key. Mourinho, you know, it's interesting, this quote, you know, sometimes he says outrageous things to kind of take the attention away and the pressure away from the team. Here he put all the pressure on his reserve. In a way, it was kind of also giving an attaboy to his starters. But I would also say that his starters have yet to really have a great win this season. So the opportunity is coming. They are playing Napoli and Milan within the next 9 days. Let's see what happens there. So speaking of a tough talk, Alex, I remember when the Champions League draw came out, and I can't fault you, like, I'm joking, because I probably would have said the same in your shoes. When the draw came out and Chelsea got Juve in the group, you were like, eh, this isn't too bad, I'm not too worried. And in your defense, I probably would have thought, you know what, it would have probably been worse to get either Inter or Atalanta if you had to pick a Serie A team. So do you kind of regret the bluster on Juve? Are you a little bit surprised with how the Champions League group has shaped out so far?
Well, you know, to explain, not excuse my excitement, but to explain it, it's more like that group overall just was not too daunting on paper for Chelsea. And compared to when Chelsea last faced Juve in the Champions League, it's a whole different Juve. And the fear factor is a lot lower. It just automatically is. Now, right before that game against Juventus, I think Chelsea had finally slipped up, as I kind of just speak out loud here. But it also did kind of feel like, besides Juve having the right approach against Chelsea, it felt like Juve was catching Chelsea at the right time. And yeah, that's right. Chelsea had finally lost a few days beforehand to Manchester City 1-0, which, hey, that happens to any team losing to Manchester City. But it was probably a good time for Juve to catch Chelsea. And I will say, Juve away, it's never going to be easy. It's never going to be easy. So I still am quite confident for the return leg when Juve come and play at Stamford Bridge. I also just feel like Chelsea, when Juve and we meet again, will probably be in a better spot. We have a little bit of an easier schedule now. Hopefully we can take care of business. But listen, all Juve has to do in this group is just be, of course, first or second. And they did what they're supposed to do, and they buy themselves time to figure it out a little bit longer when, of course, the next round of the Champions League happens, and that won't be for a little bit. We know there's always just a little bit of a break, so they can, for Juve's sake, hopefully figure out the chemistry and be stronger for the latter rounds. I mean, Zenit and Malmo, obviously not great opponents, especially Malmo. Zenit are legit, like they can give you a tough game. But you know what, David? It's impressive to see Juve actually get a 1-0 away win to Zenit. Like, that's good. You did what you're supposed to do right there. Zenit's not an easy team to play. Juve is not the Juve of old, and they get the 1-0 win. And you know what? I mean, that's what Chelsea couldn't do when they went to play Juve. So, you know, I'm not surprised how the group's shaken out. I'm not even surprised that Juve beat Chelsea, But I would be surprised if it happened a second time. Absolutely. And then I would be like, ooh, now I'm really going to eat crow if it happened a second time. Or even if Juve got a draw off Chelsea in that return leg. But listen, I think at the end of the day, Juve should almost take pride in the fact that a surging Chelsea at the time, yeah, they had come off a loss, but still overall, a surging Chelsea, European champions, it's still hard for them to come into your building and to dominate you. Still hard, still difficult. So remember that. Like, David, in a way, I know this is probably pretty boring to Serie A fans and Juve fans, but in a way, I feel like Juve need to go back to the old formula of let's shoot for 1-0. Like, that was the that was the Juve way for so long. And I understand they were greatly helped because they had the BBC and, of course, like, the BBBC, if you really want to think about it, with Buffon, Chiellini, Barzagli, and Bonucci. But the midfield was so solid, that helped additionally. With that said, like, I do feel like if they focused on being even more stout and stingy in defense and then just told Chiesa to go get them a goal, hey, maybe they can follow that 1-0 model. Because, hey, it worked well against Chelsea the first time. So I actually wouldn't say, David, to answer your question, there have been too many surprises in this group. Like, people are taking care of Malmo like they should. Zenit's a tough team, but you can get a result off of them. And like I said, going to play Juve away is not easy. But I think we'll learn a lot more. And I would assume you would agree. I think we'll learn a lot more when Juve travel to London and face Chelsea, of course, at Stamford Bridge. So, you know, David, I just threw out a half-serious, half-joking theory on maybe how Juve can really become Juve again. But overall, like, do you think Juve are turning the corner?
Well, look, I think that win against Chelsea really was the beginning of Juve getting their mojo back. And you're right, they are this 1-0 formula is why they brought back Allegri. Like, Juve tried to go another way. They really did, both with Sarri and Pirlo, to kind of play a little bit different. But they're like, you know what, this is what we do. And I do think they are turning the corner. I think, you know, the recent interviews by Bonucci and Chiellini where they were talking about Ronaldo, yeah, you can say it's sour grapes and they're like, oh, they're talking crap now. But I do think they have a point. You know, keep in mind, Ronaldo decided to leave like the last few days of the transfer window. That's a huge, you know, change. Like Bonucci and Chiellini said that basically the team was set up to try to support Ronaldo and that wool was pulled out from under their feet like right before the season started. There's also reports that overall the group, wasn't that sad to see him go, that he was kind of had his own privileges and was kind of his own thing as opposed to the team? I would say that was also kind of a little bit true about Del Piero when he was at the club, but there I digress. But I do think Juve is turning the corner. We are certainly seeing Allegri's imprint on the team. I think the best sign for Juve is that they're going back to having clean sheets. That's what Juve does. Szczesny's been a lot better recently. Szczesny's gone back to being the keeper that replaced Buffon so seamlessly. The one thing, though, that I would say for Juve that I'd be concerned is how reliant they are on Chiellini, like how important he is. You guys know I love De Ligt. I'm a huge fan of his. I might, you know, eat crow on saying, you know, he's going to be a generational defender that we talk about. But it's undeniable that when Chiellini is playing, Juve is just better. I think he just brings a gravitas and an energy to the team that's really important. And I've been beating on this drum for a while, but I think Juve, it's going to be harder for Juve to move on from Chiellini than it is Del Piero. Now, you can think that's controversial, but then just ask yourself, was it really that hard for Juve to move on from Del Piero? And this isn't a reflection on the players, it's much more on the state of the club. Like after Del Piero left, Juve won 8 more Scudetti. They improved a lot in the Champions League. They became like, they were a club that was completely on the rise. They're in a completely different situation now. So that would be the one concern for Juve is the reliance on Chiellini. And we know at some point he's probably going to get injured again, but there are definitely some signs, you know, for Juve. And this game coming up against Inter, it feels like this is coming at a great time for Juve. So let's see what happens there. That should be very interesting.
Amen. Okay, so David, I mean, Do you think Juve should extend Dybala's contract in light of his recent injuries? And I will just say, before you answer this, Paulo Dybala is one of the hardest players. Whatever the question is, where should he be played? You know, what manager is best with him? Should you extend his contract, this one, just because of the injuries and it clouds the whole picture on Dybala? Whatever the question is on Dybala, for me, it's hard to answer. Do you agree?
No, I totally agree. And look, Dybala is one of my favorite players in Serie A. He's been since he was at Palermo. And I've been to a few Juve games. He's a player that you watch him live. You just really see there's like a class to him that's really pretty remarkable. But he is an enigma. He's very hard to figure out. And look, the injuries for a while prior to last season, and there's a lot of people that tweet this that say, well, you know, Dybala before this crazy COVID time was actually pretty reliable. And he struggles since COVID and all. But there really have been a lot of injuries. There are question marks, you know, how committed is he to living the lifestyle of an athlete to be able to play a full season? So, you know, we've talked a lot on the podcast on not losing players for free and the importance of plusvalenza, and especially at Juve, who's kind of really was the club that tried to make up for financial losses with a lot of plusvalenza. So part of me is like, you know, you really don't want to lose an asset for free. But I would say if the thinking is, you know what, we can't lose him for free, let's lock him to an extension. At least we control the asset. Then we can always flip him. My question to that is, if another club really wanted to pay Dybala a big salary, wouldn't he be like in the situation like Frank Kessié, where his agent is kind of being wishy-washy and fielding other offers? Like it's just Dybala and Juve. And I've said it more than the injuries. The question is this: can Dybala and Chiesa play together? I'm still not convinced. I don't know. We don't know the answer. And Dybala being hurt and us not being able to kind of figure that out now is a huge question mark. Because I will say this: the absolute worst case scenario for Juve is extending Dybala, and then him and Chiesa don't work out on the pitch, and then a huge offer for Chiesa comes in, and then Juve is stuck with Dybala, the older player with more injury concerns than Chiesa. That would be disastrous. So I don't know what the right answer is. I will tell you this. I've been thinking a lot about the extensions for the top players. Because everyone in Italy pretty much has a top player that they has an a contract that's set to expire. Juve has Dybala, Inter has Brozovic, Napoli has Insigne. I would say the one that's the most slam dunk that I'm the team I have to keep him is Inter with Brozovic. And I know Brozovic against the top teams, he gets a little bit exposed, but you know what you're getting from him. He's incredibly reliable. The other ones, I don't know. I would say Insigne and Napoli makes much more sense for them to extend them than it does for Dybala, for Juve. You know, you look at Tonali at Milan with Kessié, they have a little bit more leeway. I don't know. The Dybala one for me almost feels like a gamble. And it, to me, it would feel like giving Dybala a huge salary as you're paying him more for past performance as opposed to what you're getting in the future. But more than the injuries, to me, the key is, can Dybala and Chiesa play together? I get the vibe, and unless you're playing like a 4-3-3, which is not good for Dybala, both of them are second strikers, ideally next to like a bigger number nine. And I'm just not sure if it's going to work together. So that's more the dilemma for me, more than the injuries. And I say this as someone who really likes Dybala as a player.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Dybala's always been a hard guy to put next to other talented players. Like, who's the best for him? Yeah, I totally get it. All right, so let's turn our attention to upcoming football. It's always nice to have the legend, Thousand Names, on the show. So who are you and Thousand picking for the weekend?
Some good games coming up, and Thousand did not disappoint. So, of course, the Derby d'Italia, the Sunday afternoon game that I'm going to try to catch on my way back from New York. Okay, so Thousand has Inter winning Juve 1-0, goal by Zecco. He says both Lautaro and Cuadrado are going to miss penalties. He says Di Marco, Brozovic, and Chiesa are all going to get red cards. He said Simone Inzaghi is going to destroy Allegri di Cortomuso, which is Allegri's famous phrase on barely winning just by the length of a horse's head, the race, despite the refereeing, Fausen says. And he says Agnelli and Nedved are going to be forced to leave the stands because they're going to be accused of trying to steal the game. And he says Ronaldo on Instagram is going to make fun of both Bonucci and Chiellini, and then Marotta is going to be in tears getting his revenge on Cherubini, which is Juve's new sporting director. In Italian, Matt, quite a prediction. Inter Juve 1-0, Zecco, Lautaro e Quadrado sbagliano rigore, espulsi Di Marco, Brozovic e Chiesa, Limone abbatte Allegri di Cortomuso nonostante l'arbitraggio, Agnelli e Nedved costretti a scappare dalle tribune minacciati per i furti, Ronaldo su Instagram prende per il culo Bonucci e Chiellini, Marotta in lacrime si vendica di Cherubini. I know it feels like a cop-out, but I am going to go draw. I don't see Inter losing two games in a row in Serie A. Juve is playing better. I'm going to go 0-0, like a boring Allegri-Inzaghi match. Next up, big game for Milan, traveling to Bologna, who are playing well. It looked like Mihailovic was hanging on to his job, but they have been playing better. Thousand thinks Milan's going to win 3-0, two goals by Giroud, Calabria. He says Tatasarano is going to save a penalty. He says Pioli's going to get back on track to win the Scudetto. He says in Italy, Milan are dominant, but in Europe, they get smacked around. And he says Sinisa is going to be humiliated in this game. In Italian, Bologna Milan 0-3, doppietta Giroud, gol di Calabria, Tatasarano para rigore, Pioli riprende la marcia verso lo scudetto. In Italia rossoneri dominanti, all'estero volano schiaffi contro chiunque, Sinisa vergognoso. So Milan in trouble. Brian Diaz looks like he's gonna miss this game again, hasn't recovered from COVID. He's become really, really important for them. I know Milan had a terrible game against Porto, but they really were decimated. I'm going to go 1-1. I'll give a goal to Barrow and I will give a goal to Giroud. Last one, another great game. Man, picked a bad weekend to go to New York. Roma-Napoli, 0-2. Goals by Anguissa, Zielinski. Spalletti is going to return in his stadium and win again. He says Roma is going to get embarrassed once again after the Conference League, that Mourinho is heading towards resignation, and that De Laurentiis is preparing a movie on Totti and Luciano Spalletti. For those of you that did follow, they did do a series in Italy based on Paolo Condo's book on Totti and Spalletti. Well, it was about Totti, and it featured to his relationship to Spalletti, which wasn't great. Okay, in Italian, Roma-Napoli 0-2, Anguissa Zielinski, Spalletti torna nel suo stadio e vince ancora, Roma ancora ridicola dopo la figuraccia in Conference League, Mourinho verso le dimissioni, De Laurentiis prepara un film su Totti e Luciano. What a test for Napoli. They've won their first 8 games. This is, well, they beat Juve, but they've had a fairly soft schedule. They did win in Florence too. Big, big game. What a test. Ooh, what a game. You know what? I'm going to ride the Napoli bandwagon, and I'm going to ride my boy Osimhen. Had another great game yesterday. I've been telling you guys, I've been wrong a lot, but I think my prediction that Osimhen is going to be the most valuable player on transfer market in Serie A at the end of the season is going to come true. It might already be. I'm going to go Napoli 1-0, goal by Osimhen. So great stuff, Thousand. As always, thank you so much for your prediction. So before we take a really nice long deep dive on Inter, let's get to our patrons. As always, if you enjoy listening to the pod, consider becoming a patron. We have a Tuesday episode just for patrons. We usually have a guest on that one too, but we answer all your questions. We had a great monthly special with Napoli Outsider last week. He comes on once a month. We have also a tier with some excellent articles by Guardaline. I write some as well. I'll have one coming today. And we answer all your questions. You become part of a great community. And we use whatever's left after paying our contributors, not me, but the other contributors, we donate to a great charity. Oh, I'm very excited to welcome the next guest that we haven't had, my good friend Fulvio Santucci, on for a while. Last season, he kind of became our go-to person with Inter, and there's a couple of reasons for that. A, he's very passionate about Inter, but also very objective. That's one thing that I really like about him. And he is based in Milano, so close to the team. And before we started recording, he told me he's been back to San Siro a few times. So Fulvio, it's been way too long since I had you on. Bentornato to Calcioland. Always a real pleasure to have you on.
Ciao, David. Thank you for having me here. Hello, everybody. So, a pleasure, as usual.
Okay, Fulvio. So let's start here, because I feel like the day that Lukaku was sold, whichever day you knew that it was definitely going to happen, felt like a little bit like rock bottom for Inter. Obviously, Conte and Hakimi had already left, and a lot of Inter fans really felt like the sky was falling once Lukaku left. I have to say, I was pretty optimistic about Inter, even when that happened, because I still think they have an excellent team. But the general consensus was really no. And I remember reading your tweets. You were a little bit down as well. So now that we've had Inzaghi's Inter for about 2 months, you've seen him quite a bit. Are you surprised that Inter has performed the way they have so far? Have they exceeded your expectations on the day that Lukaku was sold?
Well, to be honest, if we get back to that day, the answer is yes. But I have to be honest, after the Lukaku departure, a lot of things happened into the mercato for the month of August. And at the end of the day, I was pretty satisfied. I mean, I knew back in the days, and I know now, that the team is not stronger than the last year, for sure. But I think the damage has been, reduced. There has been a good idea in the signing that Inter did. Dzeko, Dumfries, Correa, also Çalhanoğlu, quality people. Now that the response of the pitch is not completely on their side for all of them, but I think that the perspective, the idea, after the departure of Lukaku, about how to rebuild in some way the attacking phase of the squad, of the team, was good. And good because it was made in a very short time. So yes, since that day, I have to say that my expectations are exceeded. But at the end of the transfer market session, I had the flavor about something that was not probably or surely like last year, but not so far.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think Marotta did and Ausilio did as good a job as you possibly could, considering the circumstances. So let's talk a little bit about the manager. Let's start here. I mean, one of the reasons why Inzaghi was brought in is that he is pretty similar to Conte, plays a very similar formation, so it would be an easier transition. What has been your impression of Inzaghi so far? Is there something that he's doing differently that stands out to you? Are you satisfied with how he's done so far as Inter's manager?
Well, half and half, I would say. It's not an easy transition, but it wouldn't be an easy transition for anybody in the world from Conte. Unless we're talking about a top manager, but of course Inzaghi is a good manager, but not a top manager even for Italy. but I have to say that the guy is showing some guts, because he proposed his kind of football, and it's a different kind of football. Of course, there are weak spots. For instance, Inter was pretty rock solid under Conte in the last 6 months of the last season, and now is practically unable to close a match with a clean sheet. So it's something has changed. I mean, defensively speaking, as a supporter, I have the impression that something bad can happen anytime the opponent is is near the the area, and this is something that I forgot.
Yeah,
I forgot last year. So yeah, but on the other side, there's an idea of possession, an idea of dominating the game and dominating the ball and add some quality and add some how can I say some things out of the box, right? Because Conte, everybody knows that you needed to play by the book. Right, and the players that didn't play by the book, no matter how quality players they were, they were simply not playing. With Inzaghi, it's different. Everyone is involved, and I'm not saying that it's better, of course, because it's not better even for the results. But it's a good idea, and it's an idea with potential, and this is probably one of the. One of the topic that is in that is go with Inzaghi because with Conte you have a lot of stuff that was pretty pretty classified. I mean pretty standard, and at some point every game seemed like each other, and it was good because they were winning game. But with Inzaghi you see a little bit of potential. So the impression is that. You know, weak spots are going to be solved. The potential of Inter can be unleashed, and this could be better. I don't think that this is a team capable to do 90 points in this area, probably 75. But in this beginning of the season, for the Serie A, we had an average points per game of 2. Pretty straight, barely straight, and this is what I expect. I expect a Serie A with 70 or 75 points. So it's pretty achieving at the moment.
Fair. So let's talk a little bit about Zic. And look, we know Inter was interested in him for a while. You know, he's getting up in age, but he's been absolutely sensational to start his tenure at Inter. But, you know, he is older, and I think even the most optimistic Inter fan can expect him to keep going. So let me ask you this. Right now, Zeko has already 6 goals in Serie A. There's 30 games to go. If I set his season total at 13.5, would you take the over? So that means he would have to score 8 more goals in the next 30 matches. Well below his current average, but that would be a good season. Do you think Zeko is going to get to 14 goals?
Yes, at the moment I would go for an over, especially because Dzeko, I mean, you said it's a matter of age, but if we hypothetically play with all the players of the same age, Dzeko is hands down the best player that we have. I mean, like technically speaking, it's just the best. And you know that because he has a cleverness and he has a vision, tactical vision. He is able to do everything and is able to understand the game like 2 seconds earlier than the game. And this is something that everybody is able to notice. On the other hand, Dzeko is able to do something like that, like one game probably. He's able to do everything perfect like this, and in the other 4 games, he's not going to do it because he's tired, because he hasn't the same stamina for 90 minutes. So yeah, apart from that, I would say that it's pretty likely that he's going for an over on 13 goal. It will be an hell of a season for him. But I suppose that he has the best chance now to prove that he's a good player, that he's a great player for the Serie A, because he was like that in the first 2 years at Roma, probably the first one especially. But after that, the things for him just deteriorate pretty soon. So I think he has the motivation to also to show that he's a player that can fill space in Serie A, and he's able to score, of course. So yes, with 30 games to go, other 8 goals are possible. It would be nice also to propose the same prediction with the assists, because I think that is going to get a lot of assists. Yeah.
Look, I'm a huge Dzeko fan. I thought Roma fans were like, no big deal that he left. I was like, maybe he's better than you think. So let's talk about the other two big new additions on the pitch. Let's start with Dumfries, who's shown some flashes, obviously some huge shoes to fill with Hakimi. What do you make of Dumfries so far? I think he's shown some pretty good things. Do you think, obviously he's not going to be like Hakimi, but do you think he can be somewhat close to what Hakimi brought to Inter?
Well, honestly, no. I don't think he's going to get close to Hakimi, because Hakimi, I think, is probably the best in the world with João Cancelo at the moment. And ironically, Inter had all two of the guys in the different part of the history. Now Cancelo and Hakimi are the best right wing that you can find in Europe. So no, it's not that kind of stuff. It's not that kind of level. But on the other side, Dumfries is interesting because he had some lack of preparation. He had some lack of tactical preparation. You see, when he's not able to defend, he's going to follow the ball instead of follow the guys, and it's something that just sounds pretty weird if with a Serie A player 25 years old. But I suppose you can learn. What is his best attitude for him and the best shots that he had is with the physical attitude, because he's a beast, basically, physically speaking. So for the Serie A, it's pretty okay to do like this. Technically, not so much. I mean, he can improve, but God didn't give him a lot of football technique. What he needs to come through is an impulsive guy. It's too impulsive guy, right? It's like he does before he thinks, and sometimes he needs to think before doing things. That's what Dumfries needs to do better. But apart from that, probably not Hakimi, or surely for me not Hakimi, but still a solid Serie A player.
There's not that many great right wing backs in Serie A, and I think Dumfries could definitely be one of the best. So let's talk a little bit about Çalhanoğlu, who I feel is one of the most controversial players in Serie A. So he was great the first game, and then it tailed off a little bit. What do you make of Çalhanoğlu so far? But what I think it's important with him is a lot of people think, he's replacing Eriksen. In my mind, he's really kind of replacing more the Vidal-Gagliardini combo that Inter had at the beginning of last season. So what do you make of Çalhanoğlu so far? Do you think Milan fans were right in saying we don't miss him at all?
I knew Çalhanoğlu even before the AC Milan. I mean, I knew him from the Bayer Leverkusen and from the Bundesliga, basically. It was a hell of a player, but it's just inconsistent. And he showed inconsistency for each and every team of his career. Sometimes he's able to be consistent for 3 or 4 months straight, and after that he's going to be not consistent for the following 6, and so on and so forth. I mean, we knew the deal, right? We knew about that, and probably without the Eriksen incident, Çalhanoğlu won't be at Inter right now. Apart from this, we see that he's a player that can give good things, especially with the free kick, especially with the corner kick. Right, and this is something that at Inter is missing since a lot of time, apart from Eriksen, but Eriksen was we're talking about 4 months, basically. So he could put out something, but in terms of being involved in the game, he's struggling, right? And it's probably Inzaghi is probably thinking now to not overexpose the guy, because the more you overexpose, and the less he's gonna perform. In that spot, I would see better Vidal. But Vidal is not always 100% fit. I mean, never 100% fit. So that's the big deal. But I think that for the kind of football that Inter is playing right now, Vidal is a little bit better than Çalhanoğlu. But if Çalhanoğlu is able to be consistent for 2 or 3 months, I think it's gonna be crucial in this football. So it's up to him. I'm not expecting anything particular from him, to be honest. But it's a good resource to have. It's better that you have it than you don't have it.
Yeah, and you're right. Clearly a huge improvement on set piece is something Inter has been lacking. So I want to ask you about Barella, because last season I thought one of the best things about Inter was kind of like Barella and Hakimi together. And I have to say I've been really impressed with Barella without Hakimi. So what do you make about him this season? And do you think it's fair to say that right now Barella is the best Italian player right now?
Yes, I can agree, of course, because I'm an Inter supporter, so I agree that Barella is the best Italian one. But, I mean, he's in a good company. I would say top three, right? Because also Chiesa has became a very good player and needs to be taken into consideration. But still, it's one of the best. And as a midfielder, as a complete midfielder, box-to-box midfielder, let's call it that, I think it's already a world-class player. I mean, top 10 in the Europe at the moment, with potentials right now. The only thing is that he's going to play all the game, because he's practically irreplaceable. And that could be an issue, because sometimes Barella is not able to perform. His style of play is all about overperforming, right? He's always the best guy on the field, on the pitch, when the game is going to an end and all the other players are tired. He seems to be like in the game since 5 minutes. That's his best, the best he can provide. But it's, you know, it's going to, he doesn't have a backup, actually. He doesn't have a player that could provide the same thing. So basically, every kind of coach, Conte, Inzaghi, is practically forced and obliged to let him play and let him go into the starting lineup. And that could be an issue if we see this thing at a long term. You asked me about Hakimi. Well, I think that also, I don't think that Barella is actually taking advantage from Hakimi. I mean, he did, but it's probably Hakimi that at some point took advantage to play in the same zone of the pitch with Barella.
We
expect from Barella great things right now, but we are not expecting right now. We are sure that he's going to deliver, because it's practically what he does since the day he's arrived, and it was 2 years ago. So this is the third season, and you know, sky's the limit right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, so you mentioned earlier the defensive liability, how with Conte you had gotten pretty spoiled defensively. So also there's Handanovic, who has to say recently has maybe been a little bit better. But so how much of a liability do you see Handanovic as, and the defense, you know, compared to last year? Because I think in my mind, if you tell me that Handanovic is going to be league average, so not, you know, great, but also not that bad, then I would say Inter are pretty good Scudetto favorites. To me, he's kind of like the X factor. Like, so how concerned are you with Handanovic, and then maybe a little bit the defense in general?
Well, you know, this is something that in my mind exists since, I mean, probably 2017. So it's like 4 years old right now. And my mind has not changed. I think that Handanovic is good for a team that can also win the league, this league, with which is level lower than the last year, or a team that could gain the Champions League spot in Serie A. Definitely not anything more than that. I mean, good player, yes, but you know, it's probably good enough for Inter right now, even if the guy is like 37 years old, so it's likely that it's the last year because of the age. You know, when it comes to the Champions League spot, it's not a liability. I would say it's a liability. But when it comes to win another Scudetto with this kind of defensive organization that is not the same that Conte gave to the team, might be a liability at some point. In a Serie A in which every point can count if you want to win the Scudetto, because you have not a favorite, you have not a team that is going to be a cannibal into this Serie A. Each point counts. And Andanovic could make you gain some points, but can make you lose also some points. So yes, it's a bit of a liability if you think about a team that wants to win the Scudetto. Probably not so much a liability if you think about a team that wants to achieve a Champions League spot.
Fair. Okay. Let me ask you this. You can pick good or bad. You can pick one good, one bad. You can be optimistic too good or pessimistic too bad. But if you had to say two Inter players that surprised you this season, who are they and why?
Well, let's start with the bad, because actually I didn't find a good one. Not because I'm not surprised, but because basically everyone is performing with according to my expectation. Well, I think the best one for the moment is Correa. This is not his style of playing, his attitude is not so much different from what we see in the last few years. Changing the team, we expect probably some more consistency. We expect him to be one of the leader of technical speaking, of course, so one of the technical leader of this team. But he struggles a lot, and the worst part is that they don't seem to be mentally connected to the team, mentally connected to the game. He doesn't seem like a guy that wants to win. Seems to be what in South America is called pecho frio. So someone that cannot play with a warm heart, you know. So it's a little bit negative. Especially because he has the best debut possible. I mean, in replacement, two goals, and everyone is at your feet for 2 weeks. So you have the perfect start, the perfect trampoline, I would say, to go with your improvement. But for the moment, it's not happening. I don't have good surprises because everyone has achieved like expected. So another bad surprise probably is Çalhanoğlu, but here once again it's similar to Correa. We knew what it's for him as well. The debut against versus Genoa was the dream debut. So he was supposed to play like this, especially because, as I mentioned before, if he's going to play very consistently, he became the very center of the team, the very man that everyone rely in order to get the team better. But after the match against Genoa, he did not have any other outstanding game. I mean, probably not sufficient. More games not sufficient. So yes, Correa and Çalhanoğlu are two of the ones that needs to get better. As a good surprise, I say I have not a good surprise because everyone is achieving what I expect. I will probably mention the confirmation of Darmian, which was, remember, David, when it was signed in 2020, there was a lot of skeptical people about him, but
he's been good.
Delivers. Yeah. For he sure. delivers. Yeah. He delivers, and he delivers also this year. And he's not a starting player, but he's not complaining about not being a starting player. He came to the pitch when he's required and do his job. Probably nothing excellent, okay, but it's consistent. It's like a D'Ambrosio, right? It's very difficult that he's going to do something bad. Nothing outstanding, of course, but very difficult that he's going to do something bad. So we trust Damian, as I trust Damian, and this is this is something positive for the guy. And in the second year, he's going to confirm this way. So I would mention him probably as a good surprise.
Yeah, no, Damian. Plus, he can play on both sides. Has been very valuable for sure. Okay, so let's close a little bit on more general questions in the league. So, Fulvio, I've been asking all of our guests this question. Curious to get your thoughts. And this is my order for whatever that's worth. So, if I had to ask you to rank an ability, who you'd rather have between Osimhen, Lautaro, Vlahovic, and Tammy Abraham, what would be your order?
Okay, so let me ask you this. Are you asking me as a general ability or the ability in proportion of the team they're playing? So the
in a vacuum, like without them being on a specific team. Like if you were in charge of a team and you could sign any of these four players, what would be the order? So let's kind of do it that way. Who you think is just the best player overall if you could sign them in a vacuum?
All right, so of course I go for Lautaro first, because Lautaro is actually a pretty, pretty good player. Probably missed something on leadership right now, but it's 24, and it's have all the opportunities to do it. For me, it's the best hands down, like striker, like player that you can rely to give him the key of an attack. Of each kind of team. After that, I go with Osimhen. Osimhen is a very good player. He's probably the player that is now taking the heritage, the legacy of Lukaku in the Serie A, because it's physical, but it's also capable to play with the team. He scores a lot, and a lot of people say that, but I agree with that about Osimhen, that if the guy was fit last year, the season of Napoli could have been different. So Osimhen second. Tammy Abraham third. I'm a fan of Tammy Abraham, but not a big fan. I mean, he had a lot of hype, especially at the beginning with Chelsea when he came from the Championship. And the Chelsea was supposed to play with the players that they had, because the mercato was forbidden back in the days. But I don't think he kept all the promises. He needs, of course, to understand where he is and right now. And he's a good guy. I mean, it's not so much up below the Lautaro and Osimhen, but not at that level, especially for the Serie A. So third. And Vlahovic is fourth, which is ironical it's ironic for me because actually I'm following Vlahovic since the days at the Partizan when he was 16. Mm-hmm. So I always knew that he was about to become a great player. He needs to be tested into a top team before being put at the level of the other three, right? Because Fiorentina is okay. I mean, he's going pretty okay at the Fiorentina, but Fiorentina is now a mid-table team, right? So, you know, it's not take for granted that he's going to have the same performance into a top team. That's why I put it below the table, fourth.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair. That would be, look, you know, you can just look at Kulusevski, who at Parma looked like one of the best players in Serie A, and how much he struggled elsewhere. So I think that's absolutely fair. Very interesting ranking. Okay, let's close on this, Fulvio. So Inter are the defending champions. You said that, you know, based on the day Lukaku was sold, you know, things are pretty good. You seem, based on what you told me, you seem pretty content and optimistic with Inter, but if you had to say one team that concerns you the most in Serie A to challenge Inter, who would it be? And I've done enough shows with you that I'm going to say you can't say Inter. You can't say that Inter are the only team that can stop Inter. So which team? Napoli, resurging Juve. I know Milan has a lot of injuries. Maybe another team. If you had to pick one team that concerns you, who is it and why?
Okay, so let's start with the assumption that for me, Inter is not a Scudetto team this year, or at least it's not a Scudetto team if the Scudetto is going to be assigned a 90 points. If the Scudetto is going to be assigned a 70 or 75 points, exceptionally, we will be probably a Scudetto team. So based on that assumption, I would say that the two teams that Inter should fear, it's a tie, so because I'm not able to decide between the two teams, are the same of ever in the history, so Juventus and Milan. And Juventus, because it's not going to... Juventus failed the evolution that they had in mind. Modern football with a different principle, winning through the good style of play. That idea failed.
Yeah.
But they were able to come back to their steps. So back where they start with this idea that actually did not work, and go with Allegri, because one thing that Allegri is going to guarantee you is that he's not going to concede goals, very few goals. And typically in Serie A, you win the league when you concede a few numbers of goals. So just for this reason, I think that the Juventus should be a concerning team. And probably... And I'm not telling this as a joke or to tease anyone, but I think that that Milan could be the team of the year this year, might be, because it's a team that played together since a long time. It's a team that is a young team, so it's pretty able to play at a high rhythm, right?
Yeah.
They run a lot, basically. This young team might be a liability when it's the time to handle some results or secure some results at some point of the year. But I think that especially if they will go out from the Champions League, which is not their cup of tea. No, I mean not yet. At the moment, I think that they could be at the top of the tables at the end of the year. So I would say Juventus and Milan. Napoli as well, but probably also Atalanta is a good option, even though it doesn't seem like this right now. But I don't know. Napoli is managed by Spalletti, and I know that at some point Spalletti had some kind of a collapse into the season. He always did like that. So it's likely that the Napoli has a good pace right now, but it's not going to be consistent along the year. And Atalanta, for me, it will be back at the top position in the second part of the season. I don't know if it will be too late for them.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't write off Atalanta. And I thought even yesterday, I know they lost, but with all the absences, I thought they showed that they are still a team to be reckoned with for sure. But Fulvio, I can't thank you enough. As always, you did a fantastic job. We're very lucky to have you kind of our Inter guy. Everyone, definitely check out Fulvio on Twitter. Has a lot of great stuff, not just on Inter, also on calendars, projection spots in the Champions League, like great statistical information there. So Fulvio, thank you so much for doing this, my friend. I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to chatting again with you during the season.
Thank you, David. Always a pleasure, as I said. So let's be in touch.